Chapter 6. Early Days at Tinaroo, 1946 to 1948. After the war ended, Bishop Aubin wasted no time in asking for the return of the Marist brothers to continue the work of the catechist school which had begun at Marau. Brother Ephraim Stevens and Brother Irvin McDonough were selected to form the new community. Travel in the region was still restricted, so the brothers had time to make preparations for their return. The return of the brothers to the Solomons. 1946 was a busy year. Ephraim writes, open quote, "After 3 months of feverish preparation, 10 tons of cargo of all descriptions were collected and packed at Bondi Junction in Sydney, ready for transport to the Solomons. On 19 March, Ephraim and Irvin flew to Auckland, New Zealand by flying boat, and 2 weeks later sailed for Suva, Fiji, where they stayed for 11 days, finally arriving at Guadalcanal on 25 April. There they were quarantined for a week owing to a measles outbreak, and they were forced to spend a dreary and hot week on board. Finally, they disembarked near Point Cruz, soon to become the new capital, Honiara. They were warmly greeted by Bishop Aubin, who had set up his headquarters in a row of tents along the beach, Visale having been reduced to rubble by American bombs. With the bishop, the brothers decided that it would be better to relocate the school closer to Honiara, which would be a more central location for students from the different missions, and where more good land suitable for gardens would be available. The war had left Guadalcanal a different place. There was battle debris everywhere. Abandoned tanks, crashed aircraft, wrecked ships. Worse than the war hardware were the bombed settlements and mission stations, and the trauma and loss of those who had been part of the terrible conflict. On 11 May 1946, Ephraim and Irvin were once again awed by the beauty and silence and the stillness of Marau Sound as the mission launch Beato cruised towards the familiar wharf. It was dusk, the same time as Ephraim's first arrival 8 years previously. They spent the night in the priest's house. It rained heavily most of the evening. The next day they inspected the ruins of their school. The two brothers had mixed emotions, heartbroken to see the collapsed buildings and the poor state of their few surviving cattle and horses, contemplating what might have been, yet anticipating a new beginning at Tinaroo. They paused thoughtfully at the still-standing posts where Japanese had tied them that terrible August day in 1942. They retrieved a few boxes of tools and an outboard motor and returned to Honiara the following day. There was much to do. The brothers inspected several sites for the new school, finally settling on the Lever Brothers' plantation land at Tinaroo. During the war, the Americans occupied part of this land and had built a hospital there. Ephraim wrote, open quote, "Everything we wanted was on this property, a plentiful supply of clean drinking water from the Tinaroo River at our back door, ample farmland with rich soil, good access roads and drainage. On the Army Hospital site were rows and rows of buildings, a ready-built school, far superior to the leaf shed without flooring that we had at Marau. It was 12 miles from the new capital and 2 miles from the open sea." End of quote. The name Tinaroo derives from the aru trees, large pines, which were a feature of the property at the time, apparently 10 trees originally. For many years, the annual school magazine was titled Whispering Aru, a reference to the rustling sound of the big trees in a gentle breeze. Ephraim's Printing Press. Negotiations for the purchase of this land began on 20 May, but it would be 5 months before the sale was finalized and the land could be occupied. During that time, Ephraim began work on writing and preparing reading texts for the new school. It was a huge project. Ephraim wrote and printed seven different reading books, 200 copies of each. Brother Godfrey Boschel explains, open quote, Ephraim had taken over a little printing press, a hand-driven one. He got out a dictionary using the Gari language, which was quite common among the Catholic population. The bishop used to correspond with the people in Gari right through the Solomons. Then he got out booklets, 4 or 5 readers. The first reader would be a booklet containing, we'll say, 100 English words, and all the stories would be made up of words using the dictionary that had at least 100 words in it. The boys cut the printing blocks out of Masonite. We had a couple of lads who were very clever at making the printing blocks. They would cut it out very finely, and they were delighted to see their work reproduced in book form. Ephraim had little photos, different little drawings of things he was explaining. He went from 100 words up to about 1,000 words in these 5 or 6 booklets, which were wonderfully put together. I am sorry that none of those exist now. On a later visit to Teneroo, I searched for those books to reclaim some of them, but no one knew anything about them. That's the end of Godfrey's quote. Irvin at Lungalunga Lagoon. Irvin, meanwhile, went to live at Buluwabu Island in Lungalunga Lagoon on Malaita Island for 3 months. He had been asked by Father Dan Stuyvenberg SM, who would become Bishop Orban's successor in 1958, to assist a Marau ex-student, Filippo Kakasi, who opened a school there during the war years. Irvin was delighted to meet his former student and proud to work alongside him in what became a successful school. The school began with 48 boys. Communication was in the Gari language. Ephraim was the only expatriate on Buluwabu at the time, so by necessity he became fluent in Gari during his stay. When Irvin had to return to begin work at Teneroo, there was much sadness. He brought 9 of the Buluwabu boys back to Teneroo with him. It is said that the superiors in Sydney were not informed of Irvin's work at Lungalunga. Living outside of community and opening a school without the provincials' knowledge were not the done thing in 1946. There were a few advantages in being out of communication with headquarters. Buluwabu was Marist work at its best, supporting a courageous local initiative to bring education to those who had none. Filippo Kakasi's and Irvin's work was remembered and celebrated in 1991 with the blessing and opening of the Marcelin Champagne Church on the island. A plaque inside the church reads, so is a quote from that plaque, which is still there on Lungalunga Lagoon. This new church unites in a special way the people of the Lungalunga Lagoon and Marist Brothers and St. Joseph's Teneroo. It was built by the people of Buluwabu with some assistance from the Marist Brothers and their friends in Australia, and replaces the ones destroyed by Cyclone Namu in 1986. It was in 1945 that this island was chosen as the site for a new school by Philip Kakasi, who was appointed its first headmaster. Uninhabited and swampy then, its clearing and raising above sea level was not an easy task for Philip and his first students. When it was completed, they built all the houses necessary for the new school to commence. Philip named it after the tallest tree in the middle of the island, the sacred Buluwabu tree. Brother Irvin, FMS, joined Philip in mid-1946, and they provided a high standard of modern education for the young men of Central Malaita. As a result of the exams, 9 of the students were chosen to go with Brother Irvin to Guadalcanal at the end of the year. There they again walked into history as the first students at the new St. Joseph School, Teneroo, where Brother Irvin remained too, under the headmaster, Brother Ephraim. This plaque pays tribute to that early link with Teneroo through the hard pioneering work of Philip Kakasi and Brother Irvin. May it remind us of their great efforts and continue to inspire us who come after them. Feast of Blessed Marcelin Champagne, June 1991. That's the end of the quote from the plaque in the Marcelin Champagne Church. Filippo Kakasi, who was present at the opening of the church, died in 2000. Another Buluwabu student who transferred to Teneroo with Ephraim was John Fagani, who died in June 2003. John's son, Thomas Kayoni, was a teacher at St. Joseph's Teneroo in 2003. Teneroo begins. 8 October 1946 was a busy day and a significant one, as the annals record. At midday, permission to buy the block of 7 buildings at Teneroo was granted by the resident commissioner. Thank you, St. Joseph. At 2:30 p.m. the first load of cargo moved out to Teneroo. The truck and trailer were loaded to capacity. We unloaded, and Ephraim, with 6 boys, returned for a second load. Irvin stayed with 3 boys to clear the cargo and arrange bedding and supper. At 7:15 p.m. the truck returned. We unloaded, ate a well-earned meal, and slept our first night at Teneroo. End of quote. Since the hospital had been vacated, the jungle had already begun to invade the area and vines were covering the buildings. In a few hectic days, buildings were cleared and raised from the ground level onto concrete blocks, which were headstones from the nearby American cemetery, the bodies having been flown home. A water supply connected, food gardens begun, buildings modified to create classrooms. 2 weeks later, school lessons began on 22 October 1946. The enrollment on opening day was 8, the boys who had come over from Buluwabu. The first timetable was work from 7:30 until 8:15, followed by a swim until 8:30. From 8:30 to 10 o'clock, there was school. Not sure when they had breakfast. From 10:30 till 12 o'clock, there was school. And from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock, there was work, followed by supper, prayers, and bed. Later that month, Irvin took 3 of the boys down to Marau to round up the cattle and horses, which were the beginnings of the Teneroo herd. Having yarded the cattle, they returned to the mission launch. Some days later, it was the turn of Ephraim and the other 5 students to go to Marau to load the stock onto the ship and accompany them back to Teneroo. Unfortunately, the ship developed engine trouble and could not leave Marau. Ephraim and the boys waited and waited and waited. 4 weeks later, they decided to walk back to Teneroo, a distance of about 150 kilometres. They were lucky to meet up with the Hambia, another mission boat, at Aola, after they had walked about half the distance. Later, after the boat engine had been repaired, Irvin went down to Marau again with some students, and finally the stock arrived at Teneroo. Some more surplus was available to the mission. Irvin McDonough reported that Father Wall, SM, was the main person responsible for the distribution of the American surplus, and that he was not always as generous to the school as Irvin would have liked. We had to battle for our share, Irvin says. The altar and lectern in the chapel were obtained from the American Naval Base Chapel. Fits our chapel admirably, wrote Ephraim. Later, an army surplus truck and tractor were donated to the school. Godfrey Boschel recalls that in early 1950s, Teneroo students were sent out to collect the brass casings from spent ammunition, which could be sold as scrap metal to get funds to help run the school. In churches across the Solomons and Bougainville, you can still find the casings from large shells being used as flower vases. A widely used item was Marsden matting, found in innumerable fences, stockyards and bridges, even 60 years on, in many places around Guadalcanal and Bougainville. By 1947, the school had grown to four classes, the brothers taking two classes each. They were busy days for brothers and boys. As well as taking regular classes, they had to produce all their own food from their extensive farm, comprising gardens, animals and chickens. Two brothers for Bougainville. In October 1947, the brothers received a cable informing them of the imminent arrival of brothers Borgia and Simeon from Sydney. They planned a grand welcome for the arrival, prepared a bonfire tower and built and decorated a platform on which the bishop, priests and brothers would be seated for the official welcome. The flight was due at 5 p.m. so the generator was moved into position and lights erected for the occasion. The big day came, 28 October. Ephraim was at Henderson Airfield awaiting the flight, while Irvin and the boys waited expectantly at Teneroo. Time passed, but no sign of the new arrivals. Then came heavy rain to further dampen proceedings. At 10:30 p.m., still no sign of the visitors, and the rain continued to fall. The boys went to bed disappointed. The brothers finally arrived at midnight in the middle of a tropical downpour. The rain lasted for several days, but at last the two new brothers were given a true Solomon's welcome on 1 November with traditional dancing, bonfire and feast. Brothers Borgia and Simeon had been appointed to the North Solomons, but worked with the Teneroo brothers for 8 months, leaving for Torokina on a wartime tank landing craft on 14 June 1948. They took with them 3 pigs, 50 white leghorn chickens, peanuts and other seeds, as well as samples of books from the Teneroo printing press. On 17 June 1948, the ex-US landing craft LST-553 arrived at Torokina, where the brothers met four Maoris priests who were running the mission station and the school. As Simeon and Borgia stepped ashore at Torokina, they were following in the footsteps of the three who had died on Sahano Island 6 years earlier. They were beginning a new chapter of Maoist educational work on Bougainville Island, and at the time of writing, in 2003, their school, St. Joseph's, continues at Mabiri, quite different, but with the same Maoist spirit. A gentle and effective teacher, Borgia was always held in great affection by his students and remained in their memories long after his relatively brief 6-year appointment, while Simeon, a longer stayer, continued on in Bougainville until his death in 1962, 14 years later. Always vigorous in his approach, Simeon was also a popular and respected teacher. His former pupils admired the fact that he chose to stay on their island for the rest of his life, and that his remains lie in Bougainville soil. In the year 2000, Peter Chanel Pina, a chief in the Kieta area, and an ex-student of Simeon reflected on his former teacher. Peter Chanel says, "Brother Simeon wanted to rest in Bougainville. He put his body on the land. He is here with us now." End of quote. Simeon's fascinating story comes later. From Torokina, the brothers soon moved to Kieta in central Bougainville, where the Maoist fathers had worked since 1901. This move marked the beginning of a significant era of the brothers' work in Bougainville.